Good afternoon and welcome to the programme. It's a tale of two counties from the heart of the country that we have for you this afternoon, coming to you from Athlone with a constituency profile of Longford West Meath. It's gained an extra seat, but there are plenty of candidates vying for that extra spot in Dáil Éireann. The deadline for nominations just closed an hour ago. We now have a total of 20 candidates running in this constituency. Five of them are here with us in the Hudson Bay Hotel today there. Fine Gael candidate Peter Burke, Saoirse Clark from Sinn Féin, Independent Ireland's candidate here Paul Hogan, Kevin Boxer Moran, also an Independent, and Robert Troy of Fianna Fáil. Welcome to you all. We'll be hearing from you shortly, but first let's hear from voters on the other side of the constituency, because we took a drive to Longford yesterday afternoon to get a view on the ground of what the big issues are in this constituency motivating the voters and to get a sense of what level of engagement there is 2 weeks as we are now out from election 2024.
It just seems to be anyone you vote for, it doesn't make a difference. It just seems to be the same crowd will get in to do the same thing over and over.
What would be the issues that would be important to you?
Well, a lot to do with homelessness as well. There seem to be bringing in people and they're housing them straight away. Where our own are lying on the streets, dying on the streets of Dublin even. And it just seems to be they're not doing enough for our own people, but they seem to be doing everything for foreigners coming into the country.
Is it important that TD is returned from the Longford end of the Longford West Meath constituency?
I would say most definitely yes. Why not? It's very important.
And for you, what are the most important issues?
I basically vote on their loyalty towards Longford itself and towards, I suppose, committing to projects that need to happen and should happen. And I would say for the town itself, the town needs a boost. You know, the town is a real boost. There's a lot of closed buildings in the town. I think they just need to do something for people like the asylum seekers as well in the country, and there are a lot of people that are homeless.
What's the most important issue for you when it comes to casting your vote in the election?
To be honest with you, Longford is really neglected in so many ways, and they need factories to come here, companies to come here, jobs. We need somebody actually to start doing something about it, to be honest.
Is it important for you that there's a TD returned from the Longford West Meath constituency from Longford?
Yeah, I think it's really important because, like, if they're from a different area, they're not going to do as much for people in the town, and it's just a lot harder for us then. So myself, I'm just out with the private rental sector. I had to hand back my house because of mounting rental prices. So I think that's something that whatever party gets in or whatever TD, they need that to be the key focus.
It's extremely important for the town to have a TD that's going to work for all the locals in the town. Like, our main problem in the town at the minute is housing. So, yeah, it is important to have a TD returned to the town.
Is it important for you to return a Longford TD?
No, not really.
What issues would be important to you?
I think housing, but for the Irish people, 100%. Definitely housing for the Irish people. I know so many Irish people that are homeless at the moment, even some family members, and it's heartbreaking to see when there's everyone else coming into the country and they're getting the house straight away. So,
Longford is, I worked here in a pub here in Longford years ago, and it was booming with 50 pubs and two good hotels, but now you have around 9 pubs here and most of them are all leased out. Nobody owns the pubs. This town is like a morgue. Business is gone. Burnington Hotel has gone out the road there. Applied to over 400 or 500 people. Lyons' factory, the army, Barry's is not there no more. Central Parks is the only place now. That's around 10 or 14 miles from Longford. And it's supposed to be doing well out there now. There's over 1,000 people or more working there, but no work in Longford. It's gone down to be a dead town. It was a great town days, you know.
Some voters in Longford there, and indeed some people who may not be voters. Now, I want to get an outline of the constituency before we get to our panellists here from Thomas Lyons. He's a senior journalist with the Longford Leader. Thomas, thanks for joining us. We have three of the four incumbents from this constituency with us, but all of whom happen to be from Mullingar in the West Meath side of the constituency. The fourth incumbent is Fianna Fáil's Joe Flaherty, who's from Longford. If anyone else wants to look up the rest of the candidates in the constituencies, they can go to rte.ie/constituencies and look up this one for the full list of 20. But let's start with that. There's always been a bit of an imbalance here in terms of representation from Longford, hasn't there?
Not necessarily. I mean, when you think about it, Westmeath is twice the population of Longford. The two towns, Mullingar and Athlone, both have twice the population of Longford town. So it's a rural constituency. you think about it in terms of those three towns that I made, 50,000 people, maybe another 20,000 in the other big urban centres. So you're looking at 90,000 people living in the rural community. Longford is well represented by the fact that we've got a TD, one out of four, and we have less than a third of the population. So
what are the different needs between the different sides of the constituency?
When I was talking to your researcher, I was saying about how Athlone was the big urban centre of the Midlands. And then when I checked the stats on it, that doesn't actually hold out. There's 22,000 people living in Athlone. There's also 22,000 people living in Mullingar. So it's not the massive powerhouse that it was maybe 20 years ago. Mullingar and Athlone are the big centres of population in the constituency. And it's funny that those two should have the largest representation, but Mullingar is the one that has all the representation with three sitting TDs in and around the Mullingar region. So Longford is doing actually quite well, the fact that we do have a TD and Athlone doesn't.
Okay. The size of the constituency going up from a four-seater to a five-seater, does that take the heat out of the campaign or is it likely to inject a bit of energy into it?
Yeah, well, the size of the constituency increases, but also the number of seats increases. And again, we're looking at those increases coming from the northeast of the county, which is the Mullingar area.
Right.
So it seems to be sort of feeding into the fact that the sitting TDs in Mullingar, although they might be perceived as being under pressure to repeat that remarkable statistic here, I was just looking at that. You're talking about nearly 30,000 votes between the three of them in the last election. So can they replicate that? Quite probably. The very fact that there's another 10,000 votes to add to that. I can't see this election passing without there being an Athlone TD returned. And realistically, I can see that Longford should also be returning a TD as well.
Okay. In terms of what the issues are in the constituency for those big towns, to what degree would they be self-sufficient and to what degree would some of them be housing commuters who are going up and down east and west, back and forth to Dublin?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's not just the commuters that are going up and down from Dublin aren't just people who are employed. An awful lot of students in all these three big urban centres can't afford to live in Dublin, and so they find themselves queuing up for trains and buses in the morning to get up to Dublin to spend 2 hours transport to get to college, go to college, and then come back in the evening. That's just one aspect of it. Transport is an issue. Transport is also an issue. When you were saying there, we took the roads over to Longford to do the Vox Pop. You'll be aware that those roads aren't exactly the best roads in Ireland. This is a major centre of population, Athlone, and Longford is considered, or 20 years ago when we were doing the National Spatial Strategy, they were saying that Longford was going to be a feeder town for Athlone. And we're still 20 years on with effectively third world roads. You know, you can't pass a car out if you're behind it on that road. And for a strategy that's supposed to be having these two towns linked together, that doesn't seem to make an awful lot of sense.
And some of the voters talking to us yesterday in Longford seem to have that sense of a town neglected. Maybe some of those infrastructural deficits you're highlighting there have had an impact. People saying that there was, you know, they felt that Longford could do with a bit of a boost to the town. One person looking for a factory, a main employer that would bring a bit of life back.
Yeah, well, we do have big employers, as does Athlone. But the neglect that they're talking about is a regional neglect. It's not just a neglect of Longford. It's a neglect of the Midlands of Ireland. You look at the imbalanced development, look at the amount of resources that go into Dublin. And look, I understand there's 500,000 people living in the metropolitan area of Dublin. You do need resources to go in there. But governments should be making sure that development happens on a more balanced national level, because if it doesn't, then you got this situation whereby it takes you an hour and a half to get to work 8 kilometres away in Dublin, whereas people are travelling that hour and a half from Longford to go to Dublin to work.
Okay, we heard a couple of people expressing concerns about immigration, seeing it as a zero-sum game between people in the constituency, especially when it came to the issue of housing. Is that something you hear quite a lot?
Yeah, look, migration is a significant issue. And look, I know it's an issue all over Ireland, but if you look at the population trends in Longford, there's an increase in population over the last couple of years, and it's continuing. And do you know what? For a lot of people, that's a good thing. But there are some people who are disconcerted by it. They don't like this massive change. And it is a big social change. It's a very different Longford to the Longford that was there 20 years ago. But the reality is that people point to, oh, it's these people coming in and they're staying in hostels and they're getting everything for free. But if you look at it, there are actually, these people are employed. Most of them are taking up jobs, jobs in nursing homes, jobs in factories, jobs in industries that long Irish people just simply don't want to do. So you can't have both sides of it. You can't say, well, you know, they're taking my jobs, but they're jobs that I don't want to do. And that's just the way the country is at the moment. Okay. We're very attractive to come to because we're the second richest country in the world.
Great. Thomas Lyons, senior journalist with the Longford Leader. And many thanks now, as I say, our panel with us here in the Hudson Bay Hotel in Athlone are Fine Gael's Peter Burke, Robert Troy of Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, Sirk Clark, Independent Ireland candidate Paul Hogan, and also Independent candidate Kevin Boxer Moran. And before people start emailing furiously and saying, you're not in the constituency, we decided we'd give all the candidates a bit of respite from canvassing immediately on the doorstep of where we are at the moment. So we are aware of that, but it's a good location to get them all in one place. We're a week into the campaign, maybe less than 2 weeks to go. Peter Burke, you're still the league leader for a moment of the campaign with Michael O'Leary at the campaign launch and his remarks. Who picked him?
Well, first of all, it was my decision. Obviously, he's a constituent of mine. He's someone that has been involved in a lot of local projects right across the constituency. And obviously, being enterprise minister, he has been very much a successful businessman, pays all his taxes here in this country, and a very proud Mullingar man. And obviously, when he offered to speak at the launch, I accepted that. But that doesn't mean that I agree with everything Michael O'Leary has said. And I've clarified that pretty clearly, that I'm obviously standing in this election on my record, and it's a very strong record in the education sector. Not a week goes by in this 5 years and in the 8 years since I was in the Dáil that I haven't been involved with schools in some way or another. Right. I write but to
he,
schools.
Sorry, he offered, did he, to speak at
he
the
did run? Indeed, yes.
Right. And while you don't stand over his remarks, the reaction would suggest many people at the launch agreed with him.
No, definitely not. The reaction was a very happy, enjoyable night. There was a few hundred people there from all walks of life, many indeed who are teachers, and they're all enjoying the night. And obviously, the comment, the way it was delivered at the very start, he was saying that he loved teachers, but essentially people were clapping right throughout the night. And Michael Leary is an unscripted individual, and that's the way he rolls. But what I would say is that, you know, I'm the one that's standing on this election. It's my track record that's up for adjudication on how I worked over the last 8 years. And as I said, every single term, twice a year, I also write out to all the schools, any support I can give them, go into classrooms, bring deputations up to the Dáil.
Have you met teachers on the doorstep out
loads
on the canvas?
Them. Absolutely loads of them.
Right.
The vast
they raise
majority
it with you?
The vast majority of them, I think everyone raised it because it was a talking point, but the vast majority of them have no issue with it because they know my track record, they know what I stand for as an individual, and they know that I've always placed education very firm on the agenda, working so hard in that area with so many schools. And as I point out quite correctly, that it's my track record that I'm going on, being obviously the first minister in Mullingar in 100 years since the foundation of our state, and secondly, really trying to deliver for the whole constituency, which is so important.
Sir Clark, you've been nearly five years in the Dáil. Would you say you've been an equal representative for Longford and Westmeath in that time?
I was talking to your producer yesterday about this, and the size of the constituency is absolutely a challenge, but one of the decisions that I made earlier on was to open 3 constituency offices, and that does give representation that's there. It takes a level of commitment for anybody who's elected to this job for this constituency to understand, firstly, the size, the challenge of getting from the 3 major towns, because it isn't a tale of 2 counties, it's a tale of 3 towns. And it takes a lot of time management and it takes a lot of planning.
Right. But opening a constituency office and being there...
Oh, I'm in them. Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. And that's what I mean. It takes dedication, it takes time. But it is absolutely doable. But for anybody who's standing for election, do you know what I mean? You're either going to represent the entire county or the entire constituency, or you're going to represent one side of it. And my personal opinion is, if you're representing one side of it, if you're representing half the constituency, put yourself forward for half the pay.
All right. Kevin Boxer-Moran, you had a clean run at Loan for quite a while. They decided not to take you up on your offer the last time. You are running again. Would you have a presence elsewhere in the constituency if you were re-elected?
Look, people know my track record. When I was TD and a minister, the last time I delivered right across the whole Longford Westmeath constituency, and if I get the honour to represent the people again and get voted, I'll do the same. my record speaks for itself. I've delivered, as I say. I've no problem working with anybody and everybody to make Longford, Mullingar or Athlone quite an attractive place. But some of your pops-ups there, they were talked about regional development, and they're things we have to look at, because we can't be always summing up to Dublin and everything pops up around Dublin. We have to look at the regional towns right around the country, and Longford, Westmeath is no different than that. And I think some of the things like that come out there today, particularly housing, if elected to Dáil Éireann, I think a national emergency in housing has to be declared. We have far too long people are out there crying, looking for housing. I was in a house canvassing in the Ballymattan region recently, where a woman 71, husband 70, two adult children with their children live there. One person crying to you because one of their sons emigrated. The failure of government to deliver in relation to housing, and that is having a major impact right across the country of Ireland, not just Longford Westmeath.
Okay. Paul Hogan, you're running Independent Ireland, a new party. How much canvassing have you been doing in the other area, the constituency in Longford? Have you been postering, canvassing?
Yeah, I suppose I wouldn't have the same resources as the larger parties. But yes, our poster teams are out. They're out. They'll be out for the next week or so. And we have been canvassing Longford and Westmeath. Today, for example, after today's interview, I'll be in Lanesburg canvassing, which is obviously the home area of Ciarán Mullooly, who's our MEP in that area. I think from your vox pop, it was very interesting in terms of the issues from Longford in terms of representation. A lot of the larger parties will, I suppose, dissect the constituency into silos. If elected, I will represent the entire constituency of Longford Westmeath. The issues on the door and the issues in terms of your vox pop, homelessness, housing, regional imbalance in terms of investment, they are all key issues in terms of addressing the issues on the doors that we are all hearing, both in Longford and Westmeath. So whether you're from Auchnacliff or Athlone, Mullingar, Mullinocta or Ballinagore or Ballymahan, I will represent the entire constituency if elected.
All right. One of the issues there, Robert Troy, was about jobs. You were Minister of State for Enterprise. You stood down from that position in August 2022 over not accurately disclosing details of a property portfolio in the Dáil Register. But in terms of your time as Enterprise Minister, what was delivered for Longford in that time?
Well, I was very pleased at that time to announce the jobs for Framespace, a modular home building company that employs in the region of 150 people currently in Longford town. We also developed the Midlands Enterprise Plan, which sets out a programme of supports for business in this Midlands region. In Mullingar, as part of the IDA plan that was launched when I was Minister of State at that department, we committed to an advanced manufacturing facility in the town of Mullingar that has gone through planning. It's gone out to tender, and Peter will probably be able to confirm this now. Construction work is due to start on that very shortly. We also committed to additional IDA land in Longford town, additional IDA land in Athlone town. So there was delivery during my 2 years as Minister of State in that department. And just to say, at that time, when I did resign from the office, I did so not because I had done or acted inappropriately. I did so because I had failed to adequately declare a property portfolio under a certain heading.
Sure.
And I have cooperated fully at all times with the inquiry into that regard.
And what's the status of that inquiry? Because as of June, there was a SIPO were still, I think, making a decision or finalising their decision on it. Have you heard back from them? What's the status of that as we speak?
I cooperated with that inquiry, and on that day, as reported by RT yourselves, their counsel, in wrapping up that day, said in his opinion he could find that there was no intentional misconduct on my behalf, but I do await the formal report, which unfortunately we're not given a time frame as to when that will be.
Okay, we're going to come back. We will come back to some of the issues that were raised in that vox pop. We're first going to take a short break.
Saturday with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.
Back still with me here in Athlone, our Fine Gael candidate for the Longford Westmeath constituency, Peter Burke, Sinn Féin, Saoirse Clark, Independent Ireland candidate, Paul Hogan, Kevin Boxer-Moran, who's running as an independent, and also Fianna Fáil's Robert Troy. Now, I want to turn to the issue of immigration, which you would have heard raised in the Vox Pop at the top of the programme. We heard from people in Longford talking about that. Paul Hogan, we spoke to you a few weeks ago about a plan to accommodate 1,000 male asylum seekers ultimately here in Athlone. But I suppose I'll start with you with a slightly different question, and that's the issue of people's sense of new arrivals in the country coming in and getting everything. Now, this is raised again and again. Clearly, people aren't getting everything if they're living in tents. But if somebody raises that issue with you in those terms, what do you say back to them?
Well, I suppose the first thing to say is that we absolutely recognise the right to seek international protection. The documentation that issued to us as local councillors from the Department of Integration set out in terms of the services that people receive when they come in. We realise and recognise that they receive a very low amount of income in terms of welfare. But there are concerns in terms of, you know, when I was in a house yesterday evening whereby an elderly woman who had a stroke, or an older woman who had a stroke, had her medical card revoked. And the question that was put to me was, well, how is it when we have single males coming into the country that they are provided with medical cards if they are working ability, if they are of the age group 20 to 40, and here we have a woman who has an absolute need in terms of a medical card who had...
Sure, so I suppose, and what do you say back? Do you say that people shouldn't get medical cards? Do you sympathise with the person on the doorstep, or do you explain why it is that they do get medical cards?
Well, I think it has to be absolutely on the basis of need. So here we have situations whereby, as I said, and there are many other examples of people who have medical cards who have had to reapply or had them revoked.
Right, but I suppose it's addressing that sense of, and in the way you tell it there, and it sounds like that woman's medical card, there's a sense there that it's almost been revoked to give to somebody else. Well, is it possible to give both medical cards?
Well, I'm not sure in terms of, I know that the health budget is significantly lower this year than it was last year. I'm not sure in terms of the...
I think the health budget has been increased considerably. Yeah.
It has increased this year, but in terms of 2023 figures to 22, in terms of the health budget, it was down $1.5 billion. But I'm saying
By what calculation?
By the department's own calculation.
Health budget has increased every
in the last
year.
Budget just
We've
gone by.
We had about an increase from $12 billion back in 2013 to $25 billion incrementally every single year. And one of the things has been, some of it has to be through a supplementary estimate, but this year is the first year that we had decided to give a two-year horizon now, so to have certainty in the health sector to deliver the change that's needed.
Maybe I'll ask the same question to you, Peter Burke, because this is an issue that comes up. People seeing resources allocated to people seeking international protection and resources allocated to Irish people as a kind of a zero-sum game. When that comes up on a doorstep, what do you say?
Well, I explain, first of all, where we've come from, that, you know, right before COVID, we had an average of about 3,000 people come to our country. That changed in the year after the invasion of Ukraine, where 100,000 people came to our country between Ukraine and 20,000 seeking international protection. So unplanned migration possesses a huge challenge to governments because it's irregular. It's very difficult to have resources in time because you don't know the numbers. So what I say to people is that we are now really ensuring that we are being processing applications quicker. We have a target to get to 90 days to ensure that those are adjudicated promptly, that people who have the right to remain in this country and seek asylum get that and get refugee status, and those that don't are asked to leave the country or are deported. And I think we need a very fair but firm policy in that regard to ensure that it has integrity. And that's one of the big challenges we have in terms of, you know, I saw so many countries that have gone to the right. Look at Italy. They have a massive problem with immigration still. It just doesn't go away. Look
sure, but I suppose looking at that concern being raised, you know, there are people living in tents. So how does the sense persist that there are people coming to the country and getting everything?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying they are. There's a huge challenge.
But that's what I'm saying. What do you tell constituents who raise that with you?
I tell people, as I articulated to you, we went from 3,000 per annum to 100,000 people that we're providing accommodation for. And for any country, especially we're trying to respond to a housing challenge and massive demographical change, that is a massive challenge. And we have to be honest about the challenge.
Oh, Peter,
so don't pretend it's going to go away.
Okay, Circa Clark.
Okay, so we need to very first and foremost be honest with people and have the conversations, because the person may raise an issue of a medical card or a specific issue. But when you actually start speaking to them and drill down into what their concerns are, the vast, vast majority of people are actually very reasonable when it comes to migration. They do not want to see our humanity thrown out like the baby with the bathwater, because government for the past 13 years have managed to make a broken system even worse when the numbers started to rise. But here's the thing. Beneficiaries of temporary protection are not international protection applications. Okay, they're very, very different things. So yes, the state has a responsibility, and yes, people have an obligation to seek asylum. But when the war and the horrendous war when Putin invaded Ukraine broke out, the state was not obliged to provide medical cards to every single individual who came from Ukraine. In fact, the vast majority of people I know from Ukraine didn't even expect it, yet were handed one. So that needs to be put out there first and foremost. When it comes to international protection, and we will all remember sitting around this table when IPAS landed into the spa out there outside Horsleap a number of years ago, there was nobody knew. Nobody knew what it was that was going on. The locals didn't know what was going on. They knew nothing about it until they seen people walking down the road. The poor people weren't even entirely sure where they are. So this is the way that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have always managed migration, and it's with a hands-off approach, and
I'll come to Robert Troy for a response on that, but I do want to ask you about your own party's proposal that you're going to consider about registering EU citizens, EEA citizens as well. In countries where registration exists, the domestic population register as well. In Germany, if you want to move to a town, you register in that town. So is Sinn Féin, if it's going to do this for EU citizens, the law will require equal treatment of everybody? Are you suggesting everyone should be registered?
What we're proposing with the registration is a way to be able for the state to say, how do we future plan here? So have we a number of individuals who's coming from a country who, in the EU, who perhaps, if their children land in the local school, is there a need for additional English support? That's what we're talking about here. We're not talking about national identity cards. We're talking about a way to be able to plan effectively and to react better and pivot better than what has been done to date.
And so, I mean, the experience of Irish people over the years, many of them students going to work, say, in Germany for the summer, they were also required to deregister when leaving a town. Many of them didn't. And many of them lived in campsites around Munich, so they just gave a false address in order to register in the town. I mean, what is it going to solve?
I think when you look at the proposal that's there, and it's a very sensible proposal, what you will see is a system that not only replaces the broken one that's there, but allows the state to be able to future plan. And that's what's really key here, is the ability to be able to do that. Whether it's in terms of infrastructure, whether it's in terms of housing, whether it's in terms of health, education, whatever the case may be. But let's be very clear here. Of the failed asylum applications that took place in 2023, there was over 5,700 of them. If you're to drill down into those figures, and remember, this is only international protection, less than 1.5% of deportation orders coming from those were actually enforced by the state. I don't think
Kevin Boxer, I'll ask the same question.
I didn't speak over you.
I want to bring in Kevin Boxer Moran. I'll ask the same question to you that I asked at the top. When people raise issues with you where you have concern about the accuracy of the concern they're raising, what do you say back to them? This issue that things are being got at the expense of Irish people by people arriving here.
First of all, I meet people on the doors, and everyone has concerns, and everyone's needs are different. No matter where you come from or where you are, I look into every possible solution to try and find an end game to help that person. But if we look at putting people in tents, putting people in fields, it's a failure of government. A failure of government to have a robust system to deal with immigration. And while we sit around the table here, we have three parties, Independent Ireland and myself. It would be far better off if, when we're elected all, that all parties don't come together to find a common solution to help those in immigration and also help the people in need.
What do you mean by robust?
Robust, the system on dealing with immigration in terms of processing immigration people, you have to look at that in a way stronger way than it is at the present time. It's too slow. It's too cumbersome, and it's causing difficulty in terms of processing those applications. I think we need to speed up the process in relation to that. I think everybody plays a part in that.
All right. And the plan for 1,000 asylum seekers, ultimately, or phased introduction to Athlone, what's your stance on that?
Look at what government have done to put 1,000 asylum seekers into Athlone. It's not the right solution. There's no way you can integrate 1,000 people into a town where we have littler services in terms of guards and health. We've raised those issues with the different people in the department. We didn't get the response we required, but we have to find solutions.
Robert Troy, this issue, it was heard out and about in Longford yesterday, but taking up where Kevin Boxer-Moran left off, the plans for asylum seekers to be accommodated in Athlone, what's your stance on that?
I think that should be paused. I think the work should be paused. I've written to Minister O'Gorman. I've spoken to him on a number of occasions. To be fair to the 5 elected representatives from the Athlone Municipal District, have met with the official from the department, have put forward a number of proposals which would see utilising the capacity that exists at the current Lissy Wullen site and taking in up to, I think, 500 asylum seekers. There's currently in the region about 200 asylum seekers, so there'd be an additional capacity for 300 more.
And when you say
more.
Paused, for how long and until what's in place?
Well, till agreement is reached. Like, one thing Minister Gorman has said time and time again is he wants to engage with the community. And from my engagement with the community, they too would like to engage with him. They have concerns, and I think those concerns need to be listened to. And I think it's right and proper. And we've seemed to have moved away from, coming down on people for raising legitimate concerns in the past.
If the concern is that the makeup of people who are going to be accommodated, it's notoriously difficult to accommodate single male asylum seekers. If that's the nature of the objection, should it still be paused?
No, what I'm saying is we should pause while we have conversation. I think to carry on with work while at the same time offer for consultation is not giving...
But Robert, you're in government. You're in government. You talked in the local elections, you were asked, we came up in the door over and over again that this was happening. Minister Peter Burke went to raise it, it's not, it wasn't happening. You yourself on the local race said it wasn't happening. Here we are 3 months later, it is, and you come on today talking about pausing it. That's not right. You're in government, you have to stick to the task. Your system of doing what we require to do in relation to immigration is failure. Just like housing, you're not a grip of what's going on in the country.
If I could respond briefly. I've had very little time to speak today, so if I could respond to the charge that's made to me. Minister Moran has been in...
I'm not a minister.
Our former Minister Moran was in government for 4 years. He talks about housing. This government built more houses in the 5 years that we were in than the last two governments combined.
You must have bought them all, Robert.
In relation to migration, I think it's right that we have a frank and open debate, and I think we need to set out our clear plan of where we're going to into the future. I, for one, if you look back at the Dáil records for the last 18 months, have been highlighting the inefficiencies in this area, have been identifying that we need to implement the Dublin Convention, that we need to speed up our processing times, that we need to increase the fines to the airlines. I want to bring in Paul Hogan in this.
Thankfully,
the Department of Justice has taken up a lot of those suggestions over the last number of months, and the progress has been made in this regard.
Paul Hogan, you've gone down. You've gone down the legal route of looking to use local government regulations to object to the site at Lissy Wullen. What's the status of that at the moment?
Yeah, well, the status of the prohibition order that we provided for under the reserve function number 39 of the Local Government Reform Act 2014. It's the Sanitary Services Act of 1948. So what we did was we have advertised the prohibition order. It was in a daily newspaper about 2 weeks ago. There are approximately 3 to 4 weeks left in that process. But unfortunately, that process didn't cease to work. So we have since engaged a legal team. And we're currently looking at that whole dimension. But I suppose what I want to say is there is a complete lack of engagement, lack of communication, lack of consultation in advance of these decisions being made. If that consultation was there 6 months ago when it should have been there as part of a standard planning permission, and that's another aspect in terms of the planning exemptions, are essentially circumventing local democracy in that local communities haven't had their say in terms of a major development of this size in Athlone. And it's not just an issue in Athlone, it's an issue in Mullingar, it's an issue in Longford, it's an issue in Coole, it's an issue in Castletown, it's an issue in Edgerstown. It's an issue all over this constituency. Right.
Saoirse Clark, I think Sinn Féin's proposal is that there would be accommodation for people seeking international protection built in affluent areas rather than areas of deprivation. There's only one very small area in the entire constituency that meets the criterion of being an affluent area. So are you effectively saying no to asylum accommodation in the entire constituency by that criterion?
No, what we're proposing to a new immigration management agency is a much different way of looking at what's happening now at the moment, because the current system cannot continue. Nobody's needs are being met. Communities are being really, really annoyed, and rightly so in many cases, in my opinion. What we want to see is a transparent, consistent approach to international protection accommodation being put in place, one that allows communities to not only have sufficient engagement, but to be able to make submissions. One of the most infuriating things, and there's many of them, when it comes to the current migration programme by Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, is that they assume they know best.
Isn't it correct, though, that your party's proposal is that they would look at the Pubble Deprivation Index and will decide on the location. And there's only one area, Gaybrook, in Westmead, that meets the affluent area criterion. So where would asylum seekers be accommodated under the new agency's operation if that was the deciding criterion?
So what we're saying, it's where the services actually exist. You cannot add an additional, any amount substantial of people into an area where you cannot get a doctor's appointment, where you cannot get a dentist appointment, where the public transport system simply is in place. And also remember that without what we are proposing to do under this new management agency, we will continue to see private operators make millions, eye-watering amount of money, hand over fist by providing this.
Peter Burke, Fine Gael is out this week with an election pledge to introduce a contribution model for asylum seekers to pay for their upkeep if they're in employment. Would that include people who are accommodated in a tent?
No, it would include people who are working. So essentially anyone who is working and earning, it would be based on the accommodation provided. So many instances of international protection.
Even a tent?
Well, a tent hasn't a value that you would, like, if someone is in an accommodation centre, they're receiving their food, they're receiving their board, they're getting laundry services, and they are working. So I think it's only fair that if someone has adequate accommodation, a tent is emergency accommodation, and it's quite ridiculous that you would suggest that someone in a tent...
No, a tent is provided, the state pays for the tent.
So
the state provides the food, you're looking to recoup some of the expenses.
So we are for people who are in longer terms. You have to be more than 6 months, obviously, because you would be required to be allowed work under the directive. And then obviously, if you're getting your bed, board and laundry service, obviously I think you should be means tested because you're earning money. I think that's an important part of our system. It is a fair system, but it is a compassionate system.
So is there an implicit commitment there that nobody will spend more than 6 months in a tent then?
Obviously, we're means testing it. So obviously in terms of 6 months in a tent, we don't want anyone to spend a day in a tent. And that's what we're trying to get away from, this model to have state infrastructure to house people. We don't want anyone in a tent. And it is a shame.
You're at that for 4 years now. 4 years, Peter.
All right, no interruption.
Kevin, you seem to just throw in shots here. If you let people talk and articulate, what Kevin doesn't...
I'm just like Michael O'Leary.
Which you're being dishonest about.
Okay, we won't have any interruption.
Unfortunately,
slogans
won't have substance and won't deliver solutions. So you're good at slogans. You're good at talk, but you're not good at delivery. I think Athlone knows that quite well. What I want to point out here in relation to 3,500 people per year that went up to 100,000 people going to our country. We provided 14,000 school places. Many people are working in our economy that are in those sectors, and we have to be honest about that. Okay. I went into a business that have 45 nationalities that are working and really contributing to the local economy, but we need to manage this in a fair way, in a transparent way, and that's what government is committed to doing.
We'll take a break. We're back in a minute.
Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.
You're welcome back. In the time we have left, I want to look at another issue that you heard in the Vox Pop at the top of you heard it, and that is in every constituency in the run-up to the election, housing. Kevin Boxer-Moran, I had a look at the daft.ie website before we came on air. There are 33 properties up for rent in the entire constituency. 1,500 euro roughly for a 3 to 4 bed house in Longford, 1,600 to 2,700 in Mullingar, anywhere in around the 2,000 mark in Athlone for a 3 to 4 bed, and 1,500 euro for a 2 bed apartment in Athlone. Bear in mind there's only 33 of them. What's the big idea for you as an independent to deliver housing at scale if people are going to return you to the Dáil?
First thing, if I was elected to the Dáil and had that opportunity, I'd declare housing a national emergency. We have to look at housing, as I said in the outset, about people going into houses, watching elderly people cry with their adults in them, some of them emigrating. But I'll give you an example.
OK, but people know it's an emergency. The question is, what would declaring an emergency do?
Colm, if I may give you an example. 4 years ago, there was a housing development at Lone that was granted. The same day, 9 apartments in a different part of that Lone was granted. A small builder within. The houses, the apartments were taken by the housing agency. Them apartments are finished and not given out because there's all sorts of delays with Irish Water and the housing agency. The same builder to build 134 houses had them built in 2 years and occupied privately. If we don't go back to the normal brass tacks of getting councils to start building houses, terraces of houses, lucrative, we will not deal with this issue, because I see all these different housing bodies being set up is the delay after delay. And I'm seriously saying to you, Irish Water are playing into that. It's starting to become a quango in terms of development. And every builder you talked up and down the country will tell you how they can build houses.
All right.
It needs to speed up.
OK, Robert Troy, you're out on the doorsteps canvassing. Housing is a major issue. There's not enough of it, and you've been in government for nearly 5 years. What do you say to people in terms of looking for their trust to say that your plan is going to work for the next 5 years?
Well, I think if you're in any of the towns or any of the villages across Longford, Westmeath, and you see houses are actually being built, they're actually being delivered. We've the first affordable housing scheme has started under construction in Mullingar opposite the Loretta Hospital. You go down along the Sea Link Road in Mullingar, Glenveagh developing houses. You go into Athlone, houses are being developed. In Longford, right, houses are being developed.
But there are more than 5,000 people in the constituency on the social housing list.
And all people who are on the social housing list are being supported through housing assistance payment or rental supports. Yes, we want to, it is a house, but it's not a permanent home. What we want to do is move people out of rental supports into permanent homes. And we are building houses. We're building more social houses now. The rate that we're building social houses now has not been seen since 1975. We are building social houses through turnkey developments, through direct builds, through approved housing bodies. People are being allocated their new forever homes under this government. As I said, we've built more houses in this government than the last two governments combined, of which you were of a member of, Kevin.
Peter Bourke, 5,000 people on the social housing list. Robert Troy referenced HAP and RAS there in terms of helping people, but only 33 properties available for rent, and people who are getting the housing assistance payment will often report that they struggle, A, to find landlords who will take it, and B, whether or not it will even cover the rent.
And the answer to that challenge is to increase supply and build more houses, and that's why, since the start of this year, over a year ago, we have 54,000 homes being commenced. And that shows that government policies is working.
Is that really the answer, though? Because in 2005, there were 80,000 homes being built at the height of the Celtic Tiger. The inflation was going up. Currently, the European Central Bank is cutting interest rates. The same conditions could pertain again, with cheaper credit fueling the purchase of the supply you're talking about.
And that's part of the story. And that's why 2/3 of our construction sector workers left our country. We had 3,000 ghost estates that Fine Gael, quite frankly, had to set the policies in place to fix. And we had a country that was spending and bankrupt and borrowing off the lender of last resort. But since then, we've built back up our capacity. And now we're at a stage where you can see clearly we're going to go close to building 40,000 new homes. We're ensuring that we're supporting first-time buyers. And that's one thing that Fine Gael is very clear on. It was our policy to help to buy, established by Fine Gael, that 50,000 families across this country got the keys to their new homes, 500 first-time buyers every single week. We're going to enhance the first home scheme to have it on first-time buyers of second-hand homes.
Paul Hogan.
Again, high-quality homes delivered into for giving people the opportunity for real home ownership, not a pretend model like Sinn Féin.
We need to let Paul Hogan in here. I'll let Sir Clark respond to that shortly. Paul Hogan, Independent Ireland's big idea for the delivery delivery of housing at scale. What kind of housing are you talking about, and how is it going to be delivered?
Yeah, well, I suppose the big issue is the lack of supply, and that's obviously in social, affordable and private. In terms of the scale of the developments, you know, we are looking at, I suppose, bringing or at least identifying housing as an emergency. That needs to happen so that you can bring in national emergency legislation to streamline the planning process, to maybe reduce the VAT in terms of material costs. We have no HAP houses available in Athlone at the minute. If you look, and I know you've done your research in terms of the apartments, there's an apartment on Daft at the minute for 2,800 for a two-bed apartment in Athlone, which is outside the reach of many people. I spoke to a teacher the other day who has been outbid by Swiss vulture funds and political organisations. We have record homelessness. There are huge issues, but I think the supply is the one that needs to be dealt with. And
do you think supply, because the issue of supply, as I say, there were 80,000 houses built in 2005 and house prices were skyrocketing. Does that really address affordability?
Well, what we are seeing is that we have all of these vulture funds coming in and taking up swoops of houses. And as I said, I met a teacher in Mullingar, Camison, the other day who has been outbid by some of these Swiss vulture funds. So I think we need to look at legislation being introduced in terms of caps, in terms of mass buying up of properties.
Okay. In terms of the declaration of an emergency, I suppose there was, Sir Clark, an emergency declared as far back as 2018 by then Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. But again, delivery at scale, who's going to deliver the houses? Because there was a flight from the construction sector during the time of the building crash. In order, apprentices currently are finding it very difficult to get their off-site hours to complete their apprenticeships. So is a quick fix really on the cards to deliver housing at scale, or is there going to have to be a time lag until sufficient labour force is trained up?
It's a combination of both, and it's a combination of multiple different things. Firstly, and I have to say this, no doubt your listeners are finding it utterly hysterical that both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael dissolved it all and then suddenly find the solutions to all the problems that they created. Well done, lads. That's not going to wash on anybody. But here's the thing. Yes, do we need to get apprentices back in? And if you look at our policy around third level and around apprenticeships, you'll see exactly what it is that we want to do, from increasing the numbers that are available, but also increasing the payment to craft apprenticeships, to allowing our local authorities and facilitating our local authorities to directly employ craft tradesmen. Okay, that's first and foremost. But if you speak to a builder will build anything that you're paying them to build. That's just also a fact. So while we may see certain construction sectors are flying ahead, be it hotels, be it offices, and I'm not saying we don't need them, but the priority for the moment needs to be put in roof over people's head. That's where it is. Robert mentioned a development out on the Sea Link Road, Glenveigh Homes. Lovely development. Two bedroom houses set you back 310,000. That's not affordable.
Okay. I want to briefly touch on the issue of transport. Kevin Boxer-Moran, people have identified the problem with roads and commuters dealing with congested traffic. You know, so not even the idea of parking in a hard shoulder far from Dublin and carpooling seems to be solving the persistent issues there. What's your big idea to solve it?
I think, look, government, I don't want to say government failed again, because my two colleagues on the right will have a go at me, but it's a failure to deliver electric buses around towns or up and down the country, but the connecting of transport between all regional towns has to be looked at. Also, you have to look at rail. Like the Western Rail Corridor has been talked about and talked about, not in delivering. You take a town like Kinnegad, great rail station there, just reopened. We want to get cars off the road.
But these are ideas that date back to even your time in government.
You were in the Office of Public Works.
How come these solutions weren't delivered when you were in government?
I'm delighted you brought the Office of Public Works. And Robert Try turned around and said, I buy electric. When I was Minister of Public Works, I delivered $1 billion for flooding. I delivered schemes up and down the country.
We're talking about transport.
I know, but I put it back when you yourself, as after saying to me, I was the Officer of Public Works. I delivered in the 2 years there. You asked me a question on transport. I'm telling you that people feel left behind when it comes to... We have a Green Minister that wants to get people into electric cars, wants to get people into buses, but the connection is not there. Rail transport has been neglected. The government on the right, the two colleagues that one time were at war criminals with one another, are now favoured. They are people that let down the system and continue to do so.
Sure. Kevin was with us one time and he was supporting Fine Gael another time. So you changed
Time. Robert, I'm a long time gone from...
And just to remind, just to let him know...
Aren't you Fine Gael?
To let him know there's no railway station in Fine Gael. It's a little bit off sort of the north of the county.
That's where we have to leave it. That's our lot for today. Sean Merriman, Mary Elizabeth Bruton were our broadcast coordinators. Research was by Niamh Dunn. James Feeney was on sound in Dublin. And Pather Kearney and Damien Gavigan were here in Athlone. The programme was produced by Ciarán O'Byrne and our series producer, Regina Henley. I'm back on Tuesday with the late debate, but up here next, the debate is continuing as you can hear, but up here next on RT Radio 1, it's Saturday Sport.
Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RT Radio 1.